Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 152. We are back to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 2, episodes 13, Surprise, and 14, Innocence. Just two little episodes, nothing special at all. My name is Selena. I have Ariana, Natalie, and Brittany with me this week. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm so excited, guys. This is going
to
be fun.
If you want to write into Rewatchable with your spoiler-free thoughts on Buffy the Vampire Slayer or your thoughts on this podcast, you can do that by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. I'm so excited to start talking about Surprise and Innocence, but before we do that, let's do some fun facts so the listeners can distinguish our voices. Ariana, do you want to go first?
Hi! My fun fact is that... Oh, I'm going to say this one because I know it might make Natalie angry, and I feel like that's the way I should start this
Good
off.
Start.
So,
oh, dear.
So, yesterday I posted an article about Pacey Witter, who is my favorite girl.
Oh my god. Yes.
And I love him, and I know Natalie loves Dawson, and he's gross.
What? So.
Yeah. Shall I go next then to rebut that or something?
Sure, go for it. Go for it.
Yeah, well, I'm Natalie, and in high school, not now, because I haven't rewatched the show, in high school, I was number one Dawson girl. I was so obsessed with him. I don't know, like, looks-wise, I don't even remember if, like, when I was in high school, because it was, like, there was no DVDs, like, you couldn't watch series all the way through, there was no, like, internet, like, there was, like, you could download Napster, you know, take 5 days for one episode to download on Napster, but I was a Dawson girl, like, far and away. Number one, really glad that I kind of have that leg to stand on, because James Van Der Beek is now... amazing. Like, he's
so is Joshua Jackson.
Yeah, but Joshua Jackson's less present, like, on the internet and stuff like that. I will now admit, what going back to look at Dawson's Creek, that Pacey is a more appealing character. I don't know why I love Dawson so much, or Van Der Beek. I just did. But
because
I
of
once,
the floppy hair. It was the floppy hair, Natalie.
I once validated this to people. Not validated, but the phrase that came out when, like, a friend a couple of years ago was like, "You liked Dawson? Why?" And I said, "Because I didn't like fun in high school," which is true. Like, I was, you know, I was just, like, super, like, serious and over-emotional. And, like, someone like Pacey, like, I couldn't appreciate, like, the depths of his, you know, trauma that was covered up by humor and, like, the stuff that he'd gone through. Like, I was just like, no, he's too flippant. No, I like Dawson. He's serious and emotional and
he feels
smart.
Everything.
Yeah, I was such a Dawson girl. But I'm curious to see how we go on this podcast because, Selena, I'm not sure if you know this, but when we did the Avatar watch, this group, me, Brittany, and Ariana as newbies, and usually with me as a super fan and usually with Mitch as a super fan, was like, it was like our most hated group.
I find that hard to believe.
No, it was bad.
There were some people that really loved
it was Brittany's
the way that
fault.
We tackled the show.
It was my fault. I'll take people, responsibility.
Like, we were the mean group. Like, the other people were the nice group. And we would go on about some very odd things. And I'm just curious to see how...
It's a good thing we got Surprise and Innocence, right? Because no one cares about those episodes.
How this group reacts to, you know, to Buffy. Because, yeah, for Avatar, we were definitely... infamous for the way that we would tackle episodes when us together. So, hopefully.
Well, you know, apparently I've been coming across as hating Buffy, so this should go over well.
What?
I can join your group now. Talk about that at another time.
Oh my god! All right,
but no, seriously though, Surprise and Innocence is going to be a good time, I'm sure. Brittany, where do you fall on the Dawson Pacey? To bring it back to what's really important,
I've never seen Dawson's Creek.
Oh my god!
Rewatchable.
No, Brittany, it's for the best. It really is for the best. I tried to rewatch it about like oh god, it will have to be about. I guess like 8 years ago, like, so I was in high school like 15 years ago and I tried to watch it about 2008. I bought the first season on DVD and I tried to watch it and I couldn't watch it. I was just like, oh, this is bad.
It's so
like,
painful.
I
recommend
like,
the third
bad.
Season. It's really great.
So, I feel like my obsession with Les Mis might have started or in some way started with Joey Potter badly singing at the talent show, though. That may have been the first time I heard. No, I must have seen it when I was younger. But let's move on. Sorry.
Do you want to give a fun fact, Brittany?
That can just be my fun fact. I've never seen Dawson's Creek.
Okay, that is a fun fact. Actually, no, I wanted to, and I know this is long and this is so dumb because we have so much to talk about this week, but I was talking to another Buffy fan on Hyperbole, and we were talking about how, like, I was saying, I think it's such a shame that Buffy has been, like, such a huge pop culture influence because, like, it's not a shame, but it's a shame because now some people are watching it for the first time, and you're like, when you come to Surprise and Innocence, you're like, oh, but I've kind of seen this twist before, and oh, you know, because so much media has kind of, like, appropriated Buffy and taken twists from it and stuff and used it on their own shows. And then I was talking to Merriman, and she was like, well, how do you know that they took these things from Buffy? And I was like, well, I don't. I just assume they did. So being the nerd that I am, I made a list of the biggest shows that have writers from Buffy or Angel. And I want to share this on the show. I'll just read it out really quickly because I think it's actually super interesting. It is... Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., The Vampire Diaries, Futurama, Clone Wars, Once Upon a Time, Torchwood, Battlestar Galactica, Daredevil, Charmed, Lost, Alias, Gilmore Girls, Unreal, Grimm, Smallville, Spartacus, Supernatural, CSI, Grey's Anatomy, American Horror Story, Firefly, Dollhouse, Fringe, Lie to Me, 24, Warehouse 13, The 100, Agent Carter, and Arrow. That's everything I could find.
I think it's perfectly true, Selena, because, you know, one of the biggest things, you know, I think with the newbies or other people or just even watching the show being like, oh, I feel like I've seen this before. And you're like, no, it started here. Like, it wasn't old when it happened here. Yeah,
it's not like copying like specific things. Like, The Vampire Diaries copied everything, but it's just like these writers, like so many of the people that are huge in entertainment now, like Jane Espenson and Stephen S. D. Knight and
Drew Goddard, and all those
people. So it's like they all sort of had their start in Buffy, or they learned the craft on Buffy or Angel, and now they're like the big names in TV writing, and it's just like the skeleton of TV writing, and Buffy is like the chest or the brain or whatever. Like,
yeah, especially. For contemporary, for like what this generation relates to, for the way that we portray teenagers or certain age groups on television, and the way that we portray supernatural stuff on television.
Mm. It's like Buffy and X-Files, all of it, you know, all of these writers came from those shows. And I just thought that was cool. So I just wanted to share that list to see where, like, so many of the Buffy writers went on to do all these amazing things, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I listened to the Nerdist Writers panel, like, all of them. Mm-hmm. And every single writer has done a Buffy and X-Files and some Star Trek.
Right.
Like they've all done it. But that's because you could, like, submit scripts on spec. Like, you didn't have to be part of a writing staff either. So it was, like, a great place to start. But you're absolutely correct, because a lot of the people who stuck around Buffy for a while have become huge now.
Huge, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I just think it's so fun. Because that's like, even if like you're watching the show now and you're saying, oh, well, it's dated. It's like a piece of history, you know? And I think that sort of lends an interesting element to it. Speaking of a piece of history, guys, we've reached Surprise and Innocence. And I have to say, I think we pretty much won the rewatchable lottery, because not only did we not have to talk about, or I didn't have to talk about Ted and Bad Eggs.
That was a great episode.
You did. I had a lot of fun. Brittany and I did.
I had a great time talking about Ted and Bad Eggs.
It was a good show. It was a good show. But no,
I enjoyed
now...
Ted.
Yeah, I know you did. I did not, but there you go. We are at the two-parter, though, now that pretty much started the era of Buffy where crap just gets real, and people watching it back in, like, 1999 was like, oh, my God, this show might actually be something special. You know, we're transitioning into a period where I think, and I don't know if you agree with this, Natalie, but I think people before this, Buffy was like, okay, well, it's on and there's not much competition. Netflix doesn't exist yet, so let's watch it. And now it's like, oh my God, they're setting up something and they're actually telling a bigger story, you know?
I agree. I think there was an element of that in the season one finale, because, you know, as a show, it would have been, you know, I've said this before, but as a show, the season one would have been written kind of in a bubble. Like, they would have produced all those episodes before it started airing. And I think season one very much had an episode of la la la, monster of the week, we're funny, we're making jokes about it. And then in the finale, when she has that sort of breakdown and you know, goes off to kill a master and dies and stuff, it's kind of a moment of, hey, we tricked you. We thought, you know, this was going to be a fun silly show with no consequences, and this is actually what it's going to be. Like, this darkness is what it's going to be. And I think that was very purposeful, and this is sort of the next step up from that of, like, okay, so you're getting more, you know, more serious about it, but this is in terms of, like, longer arcs and in terms of
foreshadowing and,
yeah, and stuff like that. This is kind of where it takes, you know, the next step up the ladder, basically.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. Before we get into the finer points of Surprise and Innocence, let's read the short synopsis written by Ariana for Surprise. In this episode, Angel takes off his shirt and we find out that David Boreanaz ages like a fine, fine, sexy wine because dude has definitely beefed up in his bones years. Speaking of boning, nice, it's her birthday and Buffy really wants to, but there are those pesky dreams of death and doom to contend with too. Meanwhile, as it turns out, Jenny Callender is not who she seems, Yana, and when she takes Buffy to her party, surprise, a new crisis arrives in the form of an amputated demon arm. Angel and Buffy try to stake out Drusilla's lair, but when the purple people eater comes to life, they barely make it out alive. In the end, they're super wet, so they take off their clothes and have broody sex, but then Angel loses his soul because those are the implications of statutory rape, I guess. Hmm. Lots of good setups for discussion there. Okay, so I know the first point is something else. I have to clear this up straight away. That guy is blue, no? Like, what
yeah,
is this?
Yeah, he is. It's just a joke. Because
okay.
I don't know. Perhaps purple people eater didn't make it to Denmark. It's yeah. kind of like a...
Oh, it's a joke. Oh,
it's like a song, and is it in True Beverly Hills? Is that where they sing that song that I know it from? I think they sing a song about the one-eyed, one-horned, giant purple people eater in True Beverly Hills. But it could be also another movie.
Well, I'm used to not getting the jokes. So. Okay. I don't even know what that is. I vaguely know what that is. But okay. Well, great, great joke. I appreciate it. I will move on then. So Buffy starts this episode having some dreams. And this is the first time in a while we've seen her prophetic dreams come about. You know, she dreams of a party and she dreams of Angel being staked by Drusilla. Drusilla goes, "Happy birthday, Buffy." And like when it was Bucky's birthday a few days ago, I was like, "Happy birthday, Bucky." But no one heard me and I laughed at myself. That's my kind of joke. What did you guys think of the dreams?
I'm sure you guys have done that. I've definitely done that where like I have a terrible dream where like I see my mother die or something, or like I'm being, my brother's getting like sliced in half. And then I'm like called up at 6 a.m. and I'm like, "Are you okay?" So it's totally irrational. But I've definitely, when she went to go Angel's house, I was like, "I get it, girl." Definitely have done that.
And that, of course, like insert the shirtless scene here. I do have something I want to bring up about this particular scene when she goes to see Angel, just about how far the Buffy and Angel relationship has come from the pilot until now. And I think this is, for me, this was the episode where everything changed. And that's why, you know, when I was on the last episode, I kind of went on a, a rant about how I didn't like Buffy and Angel, which didn't go down well. But what I sort of meant was that until this point, I did not like Buffy and Angel. I thought it was cheesy. I thought it was over the top. I thought it was super like melodramatic. But I think, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, I think this pays it all off because it all builds to this place. And when Angel goes dark, spoiler alert, Buffy is still in that melodramatic place and he's just not there anymore. And it just makes it so, your heart just clenches, I think. So I get invested at this point because it gets interesting for me. Not like I ship it now that he's evil, but you know what I mean?
I never liked Angel at all before this rewatch, basically. Yeah. Like I like him in the show. Like at this point, I think everyone knows there is a show called Angel. More than that, we won't say. But I like him in Angel. But I'm seeing a lot of the qualities that I liked him in Angel, especially like how funny and like sardonic and like self-deprecating he is in this, which I think I blocked out, or it's like a Dawson and Pacey situation. I was like, no time for that. I wasn't like seeing the deeper levels of him the first time all of the times that I watched it before, I guess, like, and now I love him. And them together, they never really, I was fine with it. I was sort of, I'm more interested in him hanging around, you know, being a weirdo than I am in like them being in love. I love him. Same. I don't know if I love them, but they never really fully explain, like, why they love each other and why they're so obsessed with each other, basically. But at the end of last week's 2 episodes, like, Ted and Bad Eggs, there were both some moments in that that I was, like, I knew what was coming, so I felt, like, so bad for them. Like, at the end of, I think, Bad Eggs, where they're kissing through her window, and he's sort of, it's almost him I feel more sorry for than, no, I feel really bad for her, but he's finally being, like, playful and comfortable and not, like, hung up on his own angst and, like, you know, enjoying
this relationship. That's because he's getting happy, Natalie. Oh, my God.
I know. And so I got really upset about what was coming. But I've never really, like, I don't really think they show why they're compatible as people
no, they don't.
At all.
They really don't.
They're just like, they're in love. That's it. You have to believe it. They're in love. Just deal with it.
That said, a lot of people do believe it. And there's a lot of support for this ship, you know. So it's not to rag on it. But I kind of tend to agree with that. Any of the newbies want to weigh in on this? Did you feel them more in this episode?
No.
Thank you, Brittany. I was like, no. Anyway, did keep going.
I also just want to point out, I know we had a listener call in or write in about this as well. This is also the debut of Christoph Beck's love theme for Buffy and Angel, which is sort of, it
is
recurs.
It?
Yeah, it's the first song.
Because I was noticing it. I was really hearing it. And I was like, oh, it's the song. But I didn't realize this was the first time. I thought
it's I'd the first time. Yeah. And it's not, obviously, this is a recurring thing. I love this piece of music. And maybe this is why I'm, like, more benevolent towards Buffy and Angel from this point on, because I love
the song now.
I love the song. And I'm like, every time I Buffy and Angel start, I'm like, yay, the song. And it's not just, like, one piece of music they repeat over and over again. Like, Christoph Beck scores the show, and he does individual versions of that music and other themes as well. And I just think it's beautiful. Did you guys notice the song at all? I'll have to play it for you if you didn't. I have to sing it for you.
No,
so you better say yes.
I did not notice.
I didn't either.
No. I'll send you a link.
It's very like, Brittany was in the Glee fandom. She knows the trauma of 6 million people being obsessed with the Klain theme. It's very iconic, like the orchestral
very iconic,
theme.
Yeah.
The Buffy and Angel one. Yeah.
It's one of the best, and like I think in general, just in terms of TV music themes, it's one of the most iconic and one of the generally considered best, you know. But you guys will notice it for sure, because it does, again, recur. So moving on from sort of that, we spoke a little bit about how I feel like this is the episode where Buffy and Angel gets interesting for me, but it's also the point when everything in general changes, and it might be like when you're just watching this show for the first time, it might not feel that way. But in my opinion, I think this is when Buffy starts being a genuinely good show because the stakes are raised so much.
I think it was good before. Like,
oh my God.
That was like sold it. There's a lot here. This is like nearly every major character, you know, has sort of turns a corner in this episode, except Giles. Mm-hmm. Giles just kind of stays there and is like,
oh, well. Yeah, true. He does have a wonderful moment at the end of the second episode we'll talk about. But
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You are right. This is like also because it's not just Buffy and Angel. It's also Willow and Xander, and it's Oz and it's Jenny.
They both have different personal directions that they're going in. Jenny obviously is this reveal that they really didn't foreshadow. They really didn't.
No, they
until
didn't.
You kind of see the guy come in at the end of the last episode or whatever it is. Yeah, there's no like sneaky hints that oh she isn't what she seems the whole time. Like it's a real, you know,
Jenny.
That's funny that you say that. That's really funny that you say that, Natalie, because from the first episode she showed up, she was so cute and stuff, but I didn't really like fully trust her. Like I kept waiting for her to either like, well, in that episode I kept thinking she was going to be evil, and then she wasn't. So then I was like, okay, well, they're just setting her up so that she can like die by the end of the season. And then that didn't happen, but I was like still waiting for the shoe to drop, maybe because she wasn't in the opening credits. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what's gonna happen?
Mm-hmm. And that's so nice, because again, like, yeah, you're right. Like it would, like either she's pure evil or she's dead. But this is actually so much more interesting because she's Yana, hashtag Yana, you know, she's this, what is it? She is Yana of the Calderash clan.
Calderash.
You know, she's there basically to guard Angel. not for Buffy, for Angel, and she's been hiding all of these secrets for them, but she's not evil, you know? Buffy is so, and this is another example, we see Buffy sort of not do what we would like her to do, and she's genuinely like, feels like Jenny has betrayed her, and she has, but Jenny is still a good person, and I think, I just love the nuance of that, because it would have been so easy to just make her evil, you know?
And not to mention, she didn't even fully know the consequences of Angel. Yeah. Like, you know, she was like, I was sent here for this. I didn't know what, you know, about the soul being taken away. Like, I didn't know any of that. Like, she probably would have helped along the way if she could have.
And it just makes her so much more interesting. I like what they did with her there.
If she didn't know, I'm sure she would have told them, because that she doesn't want Angel to be evil. That is going to be terrible. So she'd probably be like, hey, dude, I mean, you can't ever be happy, otherwise you'll go back to being evil. And he would probably be like, okay, thanks for that. I mean, that's useful information to know.
Yeah, basically, she was just in such a bad situation because, I mean, she was there to watch him and to make sure, like, she did say she was there to make sure he didn't achieve happiness, right? Or no?
Well, she was like, Angel still suffers. He still I think she didn't know the specifics, but she just had to make sure that he still was suffering for his pen, you know, for what he did, and that he still had, you know, the soul and stuff. Like, it was less for Angel's sake than for them being like, oh, good, he's still in pain, you know. Thumbs up to the fact that the Calderash people are a real Romani tribe. Thumbs down to the fact that they're like, that they say gypsies, basically.
Yes. Because, I was torn on that too, Natalie, because I was like, gypsy is like a racial slur.
In the 90s, it was not known to be one. I mean, perhaps it was, but it was terminology that people have only become really, you know, angry about in more recent years. Certainly in the 90s, I never heard anyone, you know, it wasn't like the N-word where people knew it was bad, if you know what I mean. Like, people said gypsy and they didn't realize it was not the right word.
Like, yeah, and of course, in the times when they're talking about, like, in the past, like in the 1600 or 1800 or whenever it was, they were considered, like, they were called gypsies, like, you know, when they talk about the past.
Didn't call themselves gypsies.
I actually looked up the etymology of this, and it's quite interesting because I was like, why is it a slur? Here's why it's a slur. It's like calling Native American people Indian. It came from Egyptian, like Egyptian, but they didn't have Egyptian origins. They had like South Asian origins. It's exactly like Christopher Columbus being like Indians to the Native American people, and then people up until now still calling them Indians, if you know what I mean. It's not... it's not like an aggressive based in a insult slur, but it is an ignorance slur.
But you know what I do love, though, is that Jenny Calendar is not in any way like, you know, that this is an example of like, she's a woman and she's a modern woman and she's into computers and stuff. And yeah, she has this heritage, but it's not like, and she's connected to it clearly. But, you know, it's not something that you would like, oh, she's stereotype or whatever. Like, I really like that about her. I would like her in general. And I just think this adds something super interesting to her character. And we're going to talk about the whole Buffy's reaction to her later. But I also like that because it's so wrong, you know. And I like that.
Choking her out in front of a
class? Yeah, I'm like so mad. But we'll get to that later. I know. She's the worst, but that's why she's so interesting.
The worst. I'm pretty sure I feel about Buffy the way that you feel about Katara, Natalie. Like,
really? It makes me
feel great.
Selena, this was one of the big contending factors of our world's most hated avatar group, because I absolutely hated the lead female in that show. And Ariana loves her, but we would yell a lot.
But this is where I got in trouble, too, because I said, you know, I said some things when we were on the last episode, and I was like, look, there's things I don't like about Buffy, but the early Buffy and Angel is one of them, and sometimes Buffy's character is one of them, but I believe that she is flawed for a reason. Like, she's not meant to be perfect, and whenever she does something that is horrible, the characters usually call her out on it. You know, you're not meant to side with Buffy in this situation.
Yeah, in a normal human society, you can't react with that level of violence. Like, she's so used to having violence as an outlet. You know, if she's angry, she goes and beats some people up, you know, or some demons up. And sometimes that crosses over with her to the real world. She reacts in an inappropriately violent way to people more than once. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's fair.
She killed somebody two episodes ago.
Yeah, yes. She did it.
She did. She's so struggling with all of this stuff, and she's not the best person by far in the show. But you know, I will say, like, in the Buffy community, this is a general point of contention because some Buffy fans absolutely do not like Buffy. They're like, she's the worst character on the show. She's horrible. We only watch it for the other characters. And some people love Buffy. They genuinely think that her human flaws make her a very, very real character. And I believe that, but it still means there are times when I'm just like, oh my God, Buffy. It's a complicated show. Here's someone that's not complicated, guys. Oz is the best of the best.
He's perfect. He's the best. He's the most, like...
He's the best.
You know when we did that Valentine's article, you guys, and you guys sent in your favorite, your most wanting to date fictional people?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was going to put Oz, but what I would have written would have been too spoilery for, like, we would have had to put a rewatchable, like, spoiler thing on the episode, basically. He is the number one, he is my number one fictional boyfriend. Like, he's not even my favorite character in the show, he is, but, like, I have others as well. But, like, in terms of, like, he would treat you right. Like, he's so good. I just love him so much. And the way that he handles everything is so perfect. And he's so excited by, like, Willow, but he's also, like, really good at playing it cool, but not in, like, a douchebag, because he's more experienced than her. And he's all, like, but he's still, like, super pleased by, you know, him, her liking him. And he's just so good. Yeah.
He is.
Brittany doesn't like Seth Green, so... How's that going?
Really, Brittany?
Well, I didn't like him before Buffy, so watching him in Buffy, I'm like, I have to, like, warm up to him as a person.
Well, how's that going?
It's going fine. He's great. I've been messaging Natalie my Oz feelings. I'm like, okay, he's not bad, but I never liked Seth Green outside of Buffy, so to watch him in Buffy is hard.
Why?
I mean, it's probably because I didn't like him in Austin Powers, and that's the only thing I really knew him
from. I loved him in Austin Powers. Only because that was the ones I like, but okay. I was just worried that he'd like...
I think I've only seen him in Scooby-Doo.
He was in Scooby-Doo, that's right.
He was in Will and Grace, and he was pretty hilarious in his one-episode guest star role, but...
I love him in nearly all things. Speaking of Scooby-Doo, him and Sarah, like Sarah Michelle, have been close nearly their whole lives. Like, they've known each other for a really, really long time. Like, they've been in several things together, since childhood, and so they have a really close relationship still, and which is really cute. But even though they don't like have that much to do with each other on Buffy, but so they don't get to like play into their chemistry that much, but they're really close.
Well, not yet.
Well, yeah,
there's always season 7.
Show, you know, Oz and Buffy, it's the end game.
Yes, Ozzy,
but Bozzy. Bozzy. I don't know. I love him. I've always loved Seth Green. I've always loved this character. I've loved pretty much every character he played. Kenny Fisher in... Is it Can't Hardly Wait? God, I can't remember. Ethan Embry. Yeah, he is Can't Hardly Wait. Of course it is. It's an end of high school party. Like, we're graduating from high school. We are, you know, all having one last party. Everyone's dealing with their ongoing issues. This movie is the best high school American teen movie of the 90s, like, by far, and you all need to watch it, basically.
Bold but claim. She's all that. Yeah, that is a bold claim.
No, I was just thinking about so,
10 Things I Hate so About You. Much.
Oh, my God, yes.
10 Things is a different... this is kind of more of the American Pie oeuvre. It's not as, like, gross, not as gratuitous as American Pie, but it's, like... We've ended school, and we're all dealing with, like, the things we have to do before we leave school, and it is the best... teen movie, in my opinion, of the 90s. I Can't Hardly Wait, I'm a bit about. It's not like, this all takes place in one night, and it's like, it's so 90s. It's Jennifer Love Hewitt, Ethan Embry, Peter Fascinelli's in it as, like, the jock.
Oh, God. Lauren,
yeah, trust me, he's Mike Dexter, and then Seth Green, who plays this amazing, ridiculous, like, what do you call him? Like, you know, like, one of those, like, idiot guys who like wants to be gangster and stuff, like white guys, and but he's like this lame little nerd, and he like basically reconciles with his childhood best friend who he used to be close with, and like, you know, stops being a douchebag. But he's so cute. All of the characters are so good, and it is the best teen movie of the Buffy era 90s, and everyone needs to watch it. So
okay, well, we'll put it on the list. We'll give our listeners some homework. There's lots to talk about, but I just really quickly, because we don't want to talk about fashion enough, guys, on the show. There's been some incredible stuff, and one of the best was Willow's blue hat in this episode when she's in that scene with Oz. As amazing as that scene was, that adds like 10% amazingness for me. So cute. I love Willow's fashion is developing now, and we're so far away from that like softer side of Sears look that she had in the pilot. And it just shows how much she's growing and how much she's becoming more confident and finding her place. And she has friends and she has Oz, and I like it. That blue hat is a symbol of her growth.
Still so 90s that I can't live.
Love it.
It's such a, like, nice innocence to, like, I'm just remembering, like, teen magazines in the 90s and the way, like, fashion photo shoots would be done. It was, like, so much more wholesome than the way, like, clothing is advertised now.
Well,
yeah. I don't know, but it's so ridiculous, but, yeah.
Careful, Natalie, you're showing your age.
I'm going to be 30 in 6 weeks, Ariana.
Oh, my gosh.
Yay! That's so exciting.
We're going to have to throw a party.
I want to talk about Angel and his big, amazing plan to take the judge's arm to the end of the world. And he's, like, on the docks, and he's about ready to leave. Did you guys for, like, 1 second think he was actually going to leave?
Maybe that was the Angel spinoff.
Yeah. Him on his journeys with the arm.
Oh, road trip around the world. Him and the arm.
So you, the intro credit is him, like, waving the arm and, like, drinking with it on the beach and, like, taking it for, like, fair, like, rides.
Oh, my God. He's got, like, so attached to it. They've developed a friendship. Yes. And then he has to bury it. And it's so then,
like,
sad.
Yes. And then he, like, high-fives the arm and, like, holds hands with it. It'll be
That's
great.
Right.
Spoiler alert. Oh, my God. But today was not that day when that amazing spinoff happened. So instead, you know, but he does, it does give them a chance to have this amazing send-off scene with Buffy, where he gives her the Clada ring. Natalie, I hear a rumor that you and I both had a Clada ring.
Oh, yeah! I think we've talked about this before.
I think we have.
Yeah, I'll get to it because I put this as my favorite moment in the episode, I think. So, yeah, I'll tell my story then, but... I mean, there's not much to the story. I had one because of the show.
Same.
So, yeah. But, yeah, this bit was more like I was really, you know, the show kind of skims over it, not the clattering, but this skims over the fact that he's going to leave because then he isn't, because then they take the, you know, the arm back and it becomes null and void. He doesn't have to leave. But they kind of, you know, it would have been interesting if this had kind of this aspect of, like, him going to leave, you know, might have stretched a little bit longer, like, even to the next episode, because this implication of, like, he's going to leave for years, you know, is kind of, they do have a very emotional moment about it, but it's like, oh, that's the plan, and then the plan changes really rapidly. But, like, if you dwell in that moment of the consequences of him actually leaving, it is actually a really deep moment. But do you think because it passes so quickly that it seems overdramatic? Like,
well,
you know, it's valid for what it is.
Buffy and Angel are overdramatic, so
well, so I don't know, because it's valid for what it is, but because it comes and goes so quickly, it was like, oh, that was a heightened overdramatic moment that didn't need to be there. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel about it. Knowing, like, everything that comes next, though, I think it's kind of warranted. Like, I see, you know, you in retrospect, when you're looking back in Buffy, you think, you know, why did they need Bad Eggs and Ted when they could have had episodes building up to this more? But I also think, you know, looking back on a 20-year-old show, that's serial television was a different beast back then. So I think it's okay.
Yeah, I do think Bad Eggs and Ted do build to this just purely in how happy Buffy and Angel are. In True. Purely in how, like, how kind of, you know, number one, they're like, oh, you're sexy. But number two, they're more comfortable. They laugh. They're cute. It's nice, etc. Though this little goodbye scene, if you want to get, like, metaphorical and stuff, you could take it as, like, you know, them saying goodbye to each other before he goes evil, you know, like as kind of a that kind of thing, like the proper, you know, they do, you know, have sex and stuff.
And you see how much she needs him and how upset she is at the thought of him going away, you know, in one way or another. How much she needs. And you're right, these past two episodes, like, and everything was so crappy in Buffy, and Buffy, Angel's like the high point of Buffy's life right now. So we move into the scene with the purple people eater, the joke I am totally on, guys, because I get American culture. So he basically has this scene where he says that they assemble him. He's all blue. By the way, that's the same actor that played Luke in season one, which you can maybe tell by his voice. And the explanation for this, by the way, is super unsexy. It's just we didn't give an interview. He was like, yeah, we were really pressed for time. And like, we already had his face cast. So we just asked him to come back. But he says, yeah, he comes back and he's like there to burn humanity out of the world, basically. And he burns the Dalton vampire, the one with the glasses who reads, who I'm like strangely obsessed with. And he was so new, so cute. And he also says that Spike and Drusilla reek of humanity, sort of implying that he could burn them too. But when Angelus comes in the next episode, he can't burn him. Like, he puts his hand and he can't. And I love this because it just speaks to this intricate vampire lore and how not having a soul is not all that makes you human.
Yeah, because I've been saying that for a long time, you know, about Spike and Drew and how, you know, whether the judgment of like human versus vampire is enough for it to just be like, yeah, you're evil and deserve to die versus, you know, you're not, you know, you're human. And maybe it's just like, you're human, so I don't have jurisdiction over you. But there are definitely people in the show that are shown as more evil than some of the vampires in the show, and yes, Spike and Drew are quite evil and crazy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
But evil. They also, like, what Buffy kind of writes them off as, like, none of your feelings are real, and that's not true, like, at all.
And that's another way when Buffy is just wrong, and the show explores this, and I love that about the show, and I'm getting way ahead of myself.
Time and again, she's kind of like, you're not a person, like, or, you know, you're vampires, you're not people, like, and I'm like, no, they're people. Like, they may be really evil people, but they are people.
The show establishes this, like these two moments establishes that this is the truth and Buffy is wrong. And it's so true. It adds another layer to it. And I just love it also because I love the Spike and Drusilla sort of, I don't love their relationship, but I love the intricacy of their relationship and the fact that they can have one and they can have feelings and they can,
and
I just
love it. And even when Angelus comes back, like this, you know, again, it's the next episode.
Oh God, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, so.
Newbies, you guys, I'm sorry, we're getting into like excited
it's
mode
very
here.
Excited, we're reminiscing about all of the very important moments, so
it's fine. I talked to Karen about all both of these episodes, so if you guys need to vent, I've already vented.
Give us a summary of it because the listeners
well they don't I can post like, I can post all my messages, it's fine.
You're here to talk.
No, it's good. I would rather talk the next episode because I feel like we're almost done with this episode, so we should
That's
keep
true.
Going.
Yeah, we only have the 2 points to get. We have like Spike is in a wheelchair. Did anyone see that coming? Is that weird? I think it's interesting. I like it.
I was
like
super confused because I was like, did I miss a plot point when I turned off the screen and bad eggs? Because I was not.
He was hit by a bad egg. That's what happened.
When we last saw them, which was before Ted, and I think it was in What's My Line, part one and two, the organ fell on them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and she carried him out of the church.
Yeah, and she carried him out of the church because that thing, it's never super specified, but my impression is that he broke his back and it will heal. You know, he says I won't be in this chair forever, but it's like really slow. Something needs to happen. He needs to go through a ritual like Drew did. I can't remember actually, but you know, he needs something to make him heal, but he did break his back, and even though he's immortal and a vampire, he can't walk.
It still matters, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just add something interesting because he's like, he's confined now. You know, obviously we'll talk about next week. That adds an interesting dynamic. And also just to his character, it fleshes him out. And I like it a lot.
I don't know if if you guys saw on Twitter, Mitch was asking about his facial scarring and asking if it was real, like comparing it to like Zuko versus Aman in Avatar, which again is a reference that hopefully some of our Avatar listeners are still hanging out. But I didn't know what he was talking about and started talking about his eyebrow scar, which does have a story. A non-spoilery story, if anyone wants to go and look on Twitter. But yeah, I forgot that he had that whole blistering face situation going on.
So, guys, Buffy and Angel get it on in all caps. Thanks, Ariana. That is very appropriate. Very, very sweet and tender scene. We'll see a bit of more of it in the next episode in a flashback. And Angel rushes out into the street and it's raining and he's like, Buffy! And it cuts to black. And I know the Netflix image from the next episode was super spoilery, but did you guys know what was going to happen?
I actually, admittedly, I did know about this because this was like a trope that I remember like my friends making fun of always. They're like, well, you know, you got to be careful because remember Buffy, Angel lost his soul. So I did know that that was going to happen once they had sex.
But, I mean,
also just a trope that's been repeated on TV. There's
definitely, you know, I've up until this point been very good about my anger at Joss Whedon's future work. It's not really come into this rewatch at all with Buffy. Here, I will say, there are some questions and side eyes to be given about the idea of like women's purity and the idea, you know, he's got some ongoing problematic stuff.
She's shamed in the next episode.
She shames herself. I will get into this, but I totally disagree with that.
There are aspects that make up for it because it's interesting because you have different characters react in different ways. But the base element of like, you know, oh, they had sex, it made him evil, like is like, you know, kind of, you know, the way that he has written about women's sexuality. They, you know, sometimes it does, you know, the shows that he writes about it in do a good job of having, like, at least one character give a perspective that is not horrible, but he's definitely had some really nasty consequences of women's sexuality that has been repetitive enough to be a problem for some people. Like, you know, whether it's down to Natasha and her, you know, worst thing that can happen to a woman is not being able to make babies in Age of Ultron, which is just the most out of character thing that has ever happened in the world. But
that was the worst. Yeah,
that was the real low point of his entire career, Selena. The real, that particular aspect of that particular character was just like, what crack are you on? But
you're absolutely right.
There certainly are enough characters in Buffy that kind of have decent opinions. You know, they rebut, you know, the issues with the right answers. But the fact that, oh, they had sex, oh, she's, you know, she broke a plate. It's like, you know, oh, the, you know, her purity is her broken. And like, oh, there's lots of metaphors for like.
Oh, yeah. Plainly put like that, you're absolutely right. But I think, and again, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think it's not about what issues you tackle. It's about the way that you tackle them and the way the other characters react to it, you know. And I do think we'll get there.
This did remind me because I just recently watched the Dawson Pacey. Or no, Dawson Pacey sex scene. No.
Special scene.
The Pacey Joey sex scene. And what I really did like about this one here in Buffy is that by the time it came for them to have sex, it did feel like she was ready. Like it was something that she had thought about and that she wasn't putting pressure on herself to have sex and that nobody else was putting pressure on her to have sex. It was like just something that they were both ready for. And I liked that versus like a lot of shows like in Dawson's Creek, I do feel like Joey felt like, okay, I have to have sex now because everyone else is. So
when Angel said, I love you to her in this episode, is that the first time he's actually said that? Because I feel like they have said it before. And then
I do too.
I feel like they've said it before.
Because she said like, oh, you know, oh, he's actually, because Willow says to her, like in like one of the last episodes, oh, he said he loves you. And I'm like, I swear they've said this before. Like,
yeah,
I don't
they
think
have
this
said
the
this
first
before.
Time they've said this. Or they've definitely talked abstractly about the fact that they love each other. They might not have said like face to face, I love you. But I don't know. I felt like they kind of backpedaled on that. But anyway, I had no problem with them having sex. I mean, unless you want to bring in the whole Edward Cullen, you know, issue of
statutory rape, yeah.
The experience of someone who's 200 years old versus the experience of someone that's 16 years old. And you can go for days and days on the issues with that. I mean, Buffy does kind of point it out with Oz and Willow. She's like, you're scared of this guy being too old because he's a senior, like yeah. my boyfriend had a bicentenary. But I don't know, Selena, I'm curious about where you stand on this just because I haven't been on an episode with you as a super fan. Does Angel count mentally as a 200-year-old? Like, is he a wise old man? Or because he's just been processing the same things the same way since he was 20 or whatever, since he became a vampire, does he still have the emotional capacity of a 20? Like, does his years right. actually give him the experience of an older person if he's just been living the same cycle over and over again?
I do think I brought this up before because Mitch has been saying this as well and has been saying how, you know, Angel should be hanging out with 80-year-olds and stuff. And I wrote a long thing too in a comment on Rewatchable once that this is, in my opinion, in a lot of ways, age is a byproduct of your body getting older and the people around you. Like, those are the two things yeah. that influence if your mind ages. Like, if your body ages, you get tired, you get, you begin to think a different way, your bones and also the people around you, what they are interested in. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the people and in general, like the people, it's the whole like nature versus nurture thing. Like the people in your immediate area, those are the people that determine how you speak, what you like, what you do, how you live your life. And so I think for Angel, like, he has absolutely no reason to grow older mentally because his body doesn't age and he is not out there living in the world. You know, he has
like
been
he's gone from a junior executive to a CEO, you know, like
he hasn't done those things
the
right.
same cycle over and over again.
It's like in life, yeah. you go through some milestones that age you, like you get a job, you have kids, you buy a house, you buy a car, you get all these boxes in which to confine yourself. And oh, it's awful, guys. I go live in a forest. But like, it's just, you know, if he hasn't gone through any of that, and he's never going to be able to go through any of that because he's a vampire. And so I think, and this is true for all of the vampires, they're stuck, they're frozen in the place where they died. And it's not to say that he hasn't experienced a lot of things, but mentally, like, age-wise, he is 21 or however old he's supposed to be. And there's no reason for him to hang out with 80-year-olds because he's 200. He would have to hang out with 200-year-olds, and there are none of them around, so... you know, yeah. like,
and he's not even like, you know, because it's so distant and he's seen the progression of time. Like, for example, you know, let's make this about Captain America because everything has
okay,
to be.
Let's do
you
that.
Know, like, Steve Rogers might get something out of hanging out with 80-year-olds because he clearly, you know, 3 years ago, he was in the 1940s when he remembered, you know, the golden age of radio or like when sodas cost 5 cents instead of $5. So he can still reminisce with people about like that was very immediate for him. Like he didn't see the progression of like, oh, things changing. He didn't have time to get used to any of that. So hanging out with older people, you know, actually is more current for him. But with Angel or other vampires, I don't think it's that relevant.
No, it's
but
not
I don't know.
At all.
What do the newbies think? Because I don't know how anyone stands on the vampire aging. I know Ariana has Vampire Diaries experience to draw from.
Oh, God, Vampire Diaries.
I mean, I think for me, it depends a lot on the maturity of the person they're courting. It makes me really uncomfortable when they're courting high schoolers because they are under 18, and that's gross.
Do you know, like, in Denmark, the age of consent used to be 15. Now it's 16.
Really? In California, it's 18.
In Australia.
It depends on, like, in it goes state by state in the U.S., but since Buffy lives in California, it's 18.
Right.
I do think Buffy is mature. Well, I don't know if Buffy's mature enough. She frustrates me, but I mean, I think that she knows what she's getting herself into.
Yeah.
So
it is a tough, also because he looks older than, I think it's also, he's bigger and he's looks older.
Yeah.
And she looks so small and young and afraid and the face she gets like when she's with Angel. And it's just, yeah, I definitely see the confusion. But I think, as for me, I never thought of Angel as an old man, you know, stuck in a young body. I thought of him as a young man stuck in a vampire body. I don't know. Anyway, this we can talk, we have plenty of time to talk about this on future Rewatchable. So let's move on now. Favorite scenes of the episode. Brittany, what's yours?
Basically your scene. So if you want to talk about it, you can.
Oh. Oh. No. What did you like about it?
I just like when they're at the party and like all this stuff goes down and Oz sees a vampire killed for the first time and they're all like kind of like catch up on like this big, giant, mythical creature who's suddenly come back, and Oz is just standing there taking it all in, and Cordelia's like, oh, guys, I made this cake, and I picked it up, and I brought it here. Is anyone going to eat it? And I just liked the like you have these, like this person who has experienced so much and then a person who's experiencing it for the first time and they just don't care about the bigger issue at hand. It was such a great contrast for the end of the episode.
Agreed. I didn't even realize you picked the same one. I thought it was two different scenes. But yeah, no, the reason I love this is basically because of Oz's response, like, oh, did that guy turn into dust? And then Cordy's like, surprise! Like, that was just my favorite thing. Like, one of my favorite TV moments.
I love that Cordy is so in with them, like, and just in with them, and she cares, like, she really does. She's always like, I want to help, or I'm going to do this, and she has all of these other friends. Such a sad little party, like, they didn't need the whole bronze for, like, four people, like, could have had it in the library or something, but, you know, Cordy's never, like, to her other friends, like, hey, be nice to Buffy and stuff, but she, like, secretly loves them, and there's obviously that arc, which is more important in the second episode, throughout this episode, of like Xander trying to quantify their relationship and make her admit that, you know, they like each other and whatever. But I don't know. I love Cordelia at the moment so much.
Well, and Ariana, what was your moment?
Oz asking Will out on a date because it was precious and I just love Oz. And I really feel like Seth Green is the right kind of actor for this kind of dialogue that like Joss Whedon's dialogue, because I do feel like often some of the other actors, it just doesn't work. Like, when he says it, it sounds natural. And some of the other people, it kind of sounds like actors saying writer's words.
It gets a lot better. You're absolutely right. In season one, it was pretty bad. But I think they're getting a lot better at it now. But Ozzy definitely comes in and nails it.
He's very natural. Mm. Yeah, he's very natural at delivering.
Like, he's the kind of person that would think and process things in the way that that stuff comes out. Yeah.
Yeah, true. Wonderful line. And Natalie, it's time to tell your story.
Well, there's no story. Basically, I put the clattering moment, like, just because, number one, it was this really, like, this moment had a lot of import. You know, it was really important. It would have been one of the turning point moments of the show if they didn't steal the arm back and then he didn't have to go. We didn't get the spin-off of Angel going around the world with his best friend, the arm. Like, you know, like... But
why did
the
that
point is,
happen?
You know, Buffy, you know, for her birthday, he gives her a clatter ring, which has, you know, this Irish legend behind it, and, you know, she's very touched and all of that kind of stuff. And back, the clatter ring is very much a symbol in fan culture for Buffy and Angel's relationship. Mm. And I didn't even ship Buffy and Angel, but I loved the concept. Like, there are a few Buffy and Angel episodes where just, you know, even at the time when I thought I didn't like Angel at all, just, like, the concept of, like, two people in love having to do this to each other or whatever really messed with me. Like, it was very known that I wanted one and someone gave me one, and it was because of Buffy, basically. So yeah, and I think that probably I definitely know another Buffy fan besides Selena who also has the same story.
I think it's there for me as well. Like, it was, I think when like, merchandise did not exist back then, guys. We were that far back, you know. You didn't have Amazon. You couldn't just buy stuff online. Like, in my, like, there's nothing in Denmark. Like, I once went to France and there were all these, like, sci-fi magazines in French with Buffy on the covers, and I bought all of them because that's, like, the closest I got to a poster.
Oh my God.
And, like, And so we went on a school trip to Scotland in like 10th grade or something, and there was a clatter ring, and I know it's Irish, but they had them in Scotland for some reason. I don't know why. And I freaked out. And there were other Buffy fans in my class, thank God. Like, we all bonded over Buffy and Harry Potter at the time. So, like, we were like, oh my God. And they were like, Selena, you have to have one. Cause I was like the token obsessed, like, still am. Nothing's changed. And it's just, and yeah, same. I don't particularly like Buffy and Angel, but it was the symbol of the show. And it was like, it wasn't even merchandise. It was real. Like, you held a piece of the show in your hand
I like that kind of merchandise so much
better
as well.
Too.
Like, whether the show makes it or not, I don't want a shirt that says, I am a fan of Buffy. I want, like, a shirt that is
the
something that Buffy, you know, something, like merch for Oz's band or something. Like, I like...
I have one of those, but of course, it's kind of sad to say Dingoes Ate My Baby on a t-shirt. Like, I understand,
like,
but...
I like prop-based merch where the thing could be real, if you know what I mean. Like, where it could exist in the universe. I'm trying to think if I have any good examples, but, I mean, the clattering. I have a Princeton Plainsboro Teaching Hospital, like, t-shirt from House because House is a very good show that I like a lot. And I don't know, I have, like, Steve's shield, like, the SSR shirt that Steve's wearing and he wakes up at the end of Avengers and stuff like that. So I like merch that is, like, in-universe items, not just, I'm a fan of this and it's printed on the T-shirt or whatever. So
right. Oh, so that's a good start. Let's listeners write in if you, too, have clatter rings. We'd love to hear and compare. So let's go through our favorite lines quickly so we can get to Innocence because we're running long already, of course. So mine, I'll just say it really quickly, was Buffy says, make a move, do the talking thing. And Willow says, but what if the talking thing leads to the awkward silence thing? This sums me up. This sums up my teen years, guys. This is, I am Willow and Willow is me. It's awful. Or was, I guess.
3 out of 4 of us have picked lines from the same scene, basically.
Yeah.
Mine was Oz asking Willow out, like in the continuation of this conversation, where he just kind of goes, I'm going to ask you to go out with me tomorrow night. I'm kind of nervous about it, actually. It's interesting. I just like the way that he's so, like, on the table with his feelings. It's not sly. It's,
yeah.
It's not, like, a pickup line. He's just sort of honest, and he's very, like, zen and thoughtful about it, but he's just putting the cards on the table, and I love that. And her being like, I'm going to say yes if it helps.
And then she doesn't, and then what happens, Ariana?
He asks her out, and she's like, oops, sorry, it's Buffy's birthday.
She's like, oh, I can't.
Yeah. And he goes, see, I like that you're unpredictable. So
yeah,
that's so cute.
So good.
Brittany, what's your favorite line?
Mine was between Xander and Giles when they're talking about the surprise party, and Giles is like, here comes Buffy. Now remember, discretion is the better part of valor. And Xander's like, you could have just said, shh, God, all you Brits are such drama queens. Like, it was just so perfect. And then when he's like, Xander, go to class. And he's like, see, efficiency.
Giles's reaction to Xander. I mean, I know you guys have talked a lot about Xander, but Giles's reaction to Xander is pretty much like, you know, that's how we all react to Xander at this point. It's like, I like that he does that. I almost picked the line where Xander goes, you ground his bones to make your bread. Because I thought that was a great reference.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Bringing it back. Okay, so that wraps up Surprise. It's time to get to Innocence, episode 14. Let me quickly read the synopsis and then we'll get into the discussion. In this episode, we learn that it is super important not to have sex, ladies, because your boyfriend's soul will get sucked out. Great job at making him happy. Now he will torment you forever. Basically, Angel is totally cuckoo now, and it would be so delightful if it wasn't also terrible, but it's mostly delightful since he shuts down Spike and Drusilla for being so damn basic at their job. So this is a PG podcast. So Buffy starts crying. Isn't it? Then I can say fucking basic and it doesn't matter. I'll do that. I just don't want to rate us on iTunes.
We have let's not talk about that because I think that we have sweared. I think we may have advertised it as PG and then continued to swear.
Okay,
so
let's try to avoid that explicit rating the best we can. Yeah. Anyway, so Buffy starts crying and everyone hates Jenny, even though that's totes unfair since this isn't even her damn fault, dude. And Xander breaks Willow's heart, but then uses Cordelia's feminine wiles to secure them a bomb gun, which kills the purple people-eating demon guy. So yay, advancements in nuclear warfare. But don't worry, Angel makes it out alive to torment our hearts another day. Dun, dun, dun. That was beautiful, Ariana. Mm-hmm. So Buffy in this episode, she had sex. We already covered that. But I like that it's a really big deal. Not in the way that like it's like ta-da, like announced, but it's a big deal to her. And it's a big deal not to the world, not the people around her, but like when Willow realizes and when her mom is sort of like, I don't know, there's something. I just like the gravity of her having made that decision and then what comes next and Angel being gone and Buffy being really sort of she feels like something is wrong, and I just really enjoy that. I don't know about you guys.
I don't know. We should probably point out for the record that at least so I'm told, or allegedly, the sex isn't the thing that made Angel lose his soul. It was It wasn't like, oh, the orgasm and then the soul went or anything. It was
really, I thought that's what it was.
It's easy to assume that's what it is. But no, I think they say that
like,
later.
He's happy for a moment and then everyone's like, oh.
I think it's like clarified later that it's not.
It's kind of like him lying afterwards looking at her being like, oh, I love
just,
you.
Him,
like,
him knowing that she loves him back completely, them being completely together and fully happy in that moment and taking comfort.
Aftermath, not the sex. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. That's why it didn't like happen like, you know, straight away, obviously. But yeah, so Angel is we write crazy pants, what we mean is evil. You know, he's he has that introduction to Angelus. When he's Angelus now, he bites that woman and sucks, like, the smoke comes out of her neck. Yeah. Like, that shot, like, guys, newbies, I don't know if you noticed that shot at all. That's, like, one of the most iconic shots of, like, that era of television, of, like, introducing the good guy turned bad, because it was such, it was such a huge thing when this happened. Like, no one knew, like, TV shows could do this, you know?
I mean, I think he is evil, but I think he's also crazy pants. I think that that's a good... I've been waiting to kind of talk about this for a while, and I kind of mentioned it in my Buffy Valentine's Day article, which the newbies didn't read because it's too spoilery.
But yeah, I hope
that when this is going to become an ongoing theme that becomes very evident in this episode, you know, he says a lot about it. You know, he says, you know, he hates Buffy because she made him feel human. She made him, like, he admits that he loved her and that he hates himself, that he is crazier. Like, he's crazy pants as well as being evil. I don't know how much then we should say about that, but he's deranged, like, and he's twisted in a way that
he wants to torture her. He doesn't just want to kill her like Spike does. He wants to torture her first.
Yeah, and, you know, we know that he did that to Drusilla, you know, and stuff like that. Like, he is twisted. Like, his evilness is so pure that he gets pleasure. He's a sadist. He's really twisted, so that's going to be fun.
Mm-mm.
You guys probably can't even answer this, but I was thinking, I wonder why that is, because he's so much better, I feel like, in this episode we got to see, at being a vampire, I feel like, than Spike and Drusilla. Like, Spike and Drusilla still do have, like, their weird affection for each other that kind of makes them human, but also I feel like makes them not that great at being vampires sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Angel, he's just, like, getting it done and just, like...
True.
Yeah, what you said about Spike and Drew not being very good at being vampires because they, you know, act too human.
They have too many feelings.
It's very valid, and that's definitely something that you need to remember. But Angel, I don't know, like, there are lots of vampires that aren't as pure as Angel. Like, I think that they've said it before. I think even with, like, Darla and the Master, they were like, Angelus, he was the best of us or whatever, like... He's like a dream come true. Like, he's like the quarterback of being a vampire. If you know what I mean. Like, he's a real
Angelus. Yeah,
Angelus. Like, he's a real sadist. He's a real, like, he's not, you know, affected by the world. You know, he relishes in the evil. It's not just incidental. Like, I'm a person, but I just have no morals, so I'll kill someone to eat. You know, it's not like that. Yeah. It is a way above that, like, you know.
I guess I just wonder if his personality as a human had anything to do with
that. I think what it does is that you've already kind of seen that, you know, when we've been, like, sort of criticizing Angel for being a bit of a flop, I think that's what's happening here, is that where someone like Spike and Drusilla, like we've talked before, they sort of retain a lot of humanity. Angelus maybe doesn't have, this is just like a thought that doesn't really have any basis in anything, Angelus maybe doesn't have as much humanity drawn. You know, maybe the angel that isn't Angelus is a little bit more of a blank slate, and that allows the demon to take over.
I think that's exactly it. I think Spike, you know, is someone whose personality is so strong that it carries
that the demon has taken that personality. Yeah.
But Angel was a boring, weak, possibly, you know, bland, you know, possibly blank slate. And so what's rewritten in its place is pure demon.
Exactly. And that's why Angelus is, like you say, a better vampire than Spike and Drusilla. He's more vampire than Spike and Drusilla, yeah. And the judge supports that, too, by saying he has no humanity in him. Okay, so I want to bring this up, guys. You know, the scene with...
The next point's very important, I think.
Thanks. I knew you were going to back me up on this. There's a thing, and it's a big thing in that Spike and Drusilla and Angel's relationship is very much a three-way relationship. And I think... This is funny too, because at the time, like, it's not I'm not saying that's like absolutely what it is, but at the time this was like pretty much unheard of in TV. No, but the Angel Spike thing is very much a thing, I think.
No, it's canon. It's
absolutely canon.
Oh yeah, this is not a spoiler for the show at all. This is a, like, happened in the past does not affect the show except for keeping an eye out for their dynamic. But yeah, it's word of God confirmed.
Who confirmed?
That
they, did Joss Whedon confirm?
Joss. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Are you serious? Yeah. I did not know that. You must link me to that interview.
So this is, I promise you, this is not a spoiler for the show. And I think it kind of gets referenced in a couple of the comics as well. But yeah, they used to run around. I mean, I don't know. Can I say like more than that? Like, yes, Drew, Angel and Spike, as well as other people, used to run around, you know, together as a gang back in the however. But yeah, definitely, because obviously Angel made Drew, and then Drew and Spike are together, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like she says, she's like, they're a family again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sexy family. Angel and Spike definitely had at least one, thing.
Oh, yeah, but that's sexual. The thing, but I love that you say that too, and again, it's something you can get the sort of the newbie's perspective, but again, in the 90s, it was 1999 or 8 or whatever, like, this was not something that they could ever, like, they still can't on television, like, when it's, especially when it's male characters, like, their sexuality cannot be ambiguous in 2016, so clearly, in 1999, this was probably not something that the WB would be too happy about, but I'm glad you say it's canon because it's been accepted in canon forever.
As far as I have seen, it's. Mm-hmm. I will try and find you the exact quote, but yes, my research on this matter, yes, they
is extensive. Yes,
it has been. He's like, you know, he might have been ambiguous about it saying it, but yes, it has been addressed. I don't know if it was like a constant three-way situation or if it was like, you know, Spike and Angel, you know, would once got it on together and they had issues about it afterwards or whatever, but definitely a dynamic to like watch between them on the show.
Are we totally crazy, guys? Did you guys pick up on this? I know it's only been like one scene, but
the feeling that I got when I was watching it was that as soon as Angel walked in, he was the dominant person in that like trio, and that Drusilla was like his right hand man, or he was like much more affectionate towards her, it seemed like to me. And then Spike was kind of like, even though he's been kind of the dominant one in his relationship with Drusilla because she was sick. As soon as Angel walked in, he was like definitely like third wheel. Like, hi guys, I'm still here. So that was kind of the vibe I got.
That was probably very much the intended vibe that you were supposed to get. This is going to be great, guys. Do we want to say anything else about this? I don't want to say anything else.
Brittany, you mentioned this when you were live blogging these episodes on Facebook.
I was. Yeah, it was basically just what Adriana was saying about when he walked in the room, you could definitely sense that he, like, you get a better understanding of why everyone held him up as this figure of like someone who should not return, and why he has his own book, and why people study him, because he just took control. And you could tell like Spike was like, ah, damn, back to being second fiddle again. this is really sad. But yeah, I loved it. I love Angelus. I hate Angel now that I know what he has the potential to be.
I'm also a big fan of Angelus.
Yes, a lot of people are. That's good to hear.
It reminds me, well, obviously they like copy this, but it's definitely like Steph and Salvatore without his humanity. So very fun.
I want to say like, and that whole Stefan, humanity less Stefan, it is an interesting thing because like, I watched Vampire Diaries for a long time too. And obviously like I got so sick of them copying everything Buffy did. Like it was like, there came a point where I was like, this is insane. Like they can't keep doing this. But the Ripper Stefan thing, what I like this a lot more because it's a lot less ambiguous. Like with Ripper Stefan, I was always a little bit like, but why is he choosing evil at this particular point? Like, why can he just turn it off at will and turn it on? And what does it mean? This is like very clearly like Angel loses his soul, boom, and is not his choice. And now he's evil. Yeah. And that's what makes the people around him, the conflict for them becomes a lot, it becomes a lot more dangerous for them because he's pure evil now and he knows them and they know him, and for Buffy too, it just raises the stakes, no pun intended, in a way that I just really love it. But before we sort of get into some of that Buffy stuff, I do just want to briefly talk about how the whole Sandra and Cordelia and Willow scene in this episode, which was also a huge emotional blow. You know, Sandra and Cordelia have what is actually a genuinely sweet moment in the library. You sort of, you know, they're fighting and you sort of get the sense that something potentially very like sweet could be developing between them. But then of course there's Willow and it just transitions into one of the most heartbreaking and in my opinion, relatable scenes. And I think this is why they've built up Xander to be this character that he is. because it allows a scene like that to happen. And I'll just tell you what I like about this whole mess of Sander and Willow is usually, like, in TV shows, these things work out. Like, either it's completely platonic friendship, like, I don't know, Lucas and Haley in One Tree Hill or whatever, or it's the whole, like, she's all that thing, you know, she was right in front of me all along. I think it's just one of those ways in which Buffy sort of is a little bit more real and is a little bit more nuanced and takes, like, takes a step away from fiction to say, okay, but we're trying to tell a story about real people here, because things like this would happen. Willow likes Sander. He loves her, but he does not see her that way. And she can't just snap out of it because Oz comes in and is great. Like, that's not how it works. And it, her feelings are not magically erased. And for me, it just, it hits home because, like, we've all been Willow in this situation, I'm sure, at least, you know, it, for me, very personal sort of connection there. I don't know about you guys.
It's such an awkward thing to have going on because you do get that moment in the library of showing that Cordelia and Xander do have something that they, you know, because when he's like, you know, do you want to make out? She's not like, oh, okay. She's like, she does the kind of tender, like, yeah, mm-hmm. like, you know, she knows she likes him. But then, you know, with Willow's reaction, just, it kind of is, it hits home that the whole time, because Xander's referenced it before to Buffy, he's like, oh, Willow, you know, she, you know, it'll never be, or whatever, you know, they've kind of, you know, joked, either Willow to Buffy or Xander to Buffy have discussed the fact that everyone knows Willow likes Xander. And that's so awkward to live with, like, when they're already best friends, like, you know, like, and that they haven't confronted it before now, you know, it's horrible, like, really, like, knowing that. And, you know, they do a relatively good job of, like, Xander not being too condescending to Willow because of that. Like, it doesn't really affect how he treats her, but they never go into how sort of awkward that feels behind the scenes until now. And, yeah, what she says, you know, you'd rather be with someone you hate than be with me. Like, she kind of puts all her cards on the table, and it is so sad and weird. Yeah.
And Sander, like, Sander gets to be a teenage boy in the show in a way that I think shows, TV shows in general are really bad at depicting teenagers. Like, they're too perfect, they're too knowledgeable about the world, they're too well-spoken, they're too put together, they're too good. And Sander is not good. Like, he's good in a lot of ways, but in these ways, emotional ways, he's not good. And I appreciate that he gets to be, that we get to have a kind of character like this.
He's very Ron Weasley sometimes, you know, Hermione being like,
yeah, he's not, see that.
No, not as good as Ron. I love Ron, and I sometimes love Xander, but, you know, when she, it's just that phrase that I use for every character, it's just like, just because you have the emotional range of a teaspoon doesn't mean we all do.
That whole Ron Lavender thing is very, like, Xander Cordelia. This goes back to my whole theory.
I know, it's different. It's different. Okay, guys, I totally hate on Xander all the time. I think he's gross. I don't like him at all. However, in this situation, I have to back him up. He hasn't done anything wrong. He likes Cordelia, so he makes out with Cordelia. He has that right. He doesn't like Willow. That's fine. He hasn't led her on in any way. It's uncomfortable that she has these feelings, but I think he's done his best to try and, like, be cool to her. So
yeah, you're right.
It's an unfortunate situation.
Ice cream nose moment.
That's right. They did.
I think that's so true, Ariana. And I think when I say, like, he gets to be teenage boy, it's not to say, like, he's a... Because I actually, like, I've sort of tried to do my best to... What's it called? Like, defend Sander a little bit, because I do think his... Like Buffy, I think so, part of the strength of his character comes in the fact that he's allowed to be a jerk sometimes and a hero at other times. Like, he was the one ready to throw himself out there to save Buffy when no one else was. And you're absolutely right. Like, that's the true heartbreak of this situation. There's no bad guy and there's no solution. It's not, like I said, but Willow can't just snap out of it and Sander can't just fall in love with her. Like, that's not how it works. And I thought that was, it's one of the most real moments of the show so far. And I really loved it, which you'll see when we get to my favorite scene. Yeah, moving from one emotional roller coaster to another emotional roller coaster, Buffy goes back. This is a one with a loop, guys. Buffy goes back to Angel's, and he's there, and he's shirtless, and he's evil. And this was so uncomfortable. He tears her down in just the most uncomfortable way. I like the scene, but I also hate the scene. Thoughts?
It's very mean.
I really liked this scene, but I like Naomi Angel, so.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is so great. This is such good stuff. I mean, because finally, for once, they felt like they had chemistry in a weird way to me, because they had, like, real emotions that were flying, not just like brood, brood, brood.
Because finally, so Angelus gets to be a real character. Like, that's the thing that's happening here. Brittany, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I thought, well, first of all, I love Angelus, but this scene was the first time where you realize for on Buffy's end, it wasn't just some like stupid, oh, I like this guy because he's a vampire, knows my world, like whatever. Like, it was really deep for her. And now she's seeing this guy just turn out to be like any other guy without all of this worldly experience and like didn't feel anything. And she's just being like basically stripped down in a completely different way by Angelus. And it was like, I thought Sarah Michelle Gellar in this episode did such a good job of not acting like it could have been really bad. Like, that could have really taken me out of all of these emotional moments. But I thought that she did a really good job of portraying how hurt she was.
And this, for me, this is the scene that really makes the sappy love stuff they've had in the past worth it, because they were so sappy. But in this scene, like, this totally catches in on that, because she's still being, like you said, but in a good way. Like, she's being so like, oh, Angel, I love you. And he's not, he's just shut down. And she's like, but we were so sappy together. And he's like, nope. And it just, it works. And the contrast is so striking.
The worst is the fact that he isn't even straight up like, hold it there. You know, like, nope. You know, he's not just like, nope, at her right away.
He lets
her run up to him and hold him and kiss her. Like, you know, hey, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then she's like, you didn't call me. And then he's like, yeah, well, why would I? You know, like the fact that he kind of, you know, he's not like, hey, it's Angelus, I don't love you anymore, like flat out. He's like, he lets her believe that he's just a douchebag and like just a cruel guy. And
he's so
really
terrible in such a human way. Like, even though his humanity's gone, like, that was so human, his response to her. Like, guys do react like that sometimes.
Yeah. That's what really, like Brittany said, like, really strips her down. I mean, someone said it really strips her down in that way.
Yeah, I have one of the worst things a guy ever said to me in high school. This is going to get, like, a therapy moment for a second. Okay. I've had a very tumultuous relationship with this guy. He was not Angel age or anything. He was my age, but we had a really weird breakup and then got back together, and then he tried to throw me off at some other point, and basically at some point told me that the reason he'd been stringing me along was purely so that he could tell me that it wasn't real, because he thought it was funny for me to cry and break down and stuff like that. Like, it was this.
Oh my
God. Oh yeah. Yeah. And that wasn't even the last I saw of him. This continued to go on for another year because I'm sick and because I've clearly learned too many life lessons about how to handle things from Buffy and not from, you know, elsewhere. But yeah, this, like literally was like, yeah, no, it was all a lie. I was just pretending to, like you again so that I could publicly drop you and upset you, basically.
My God. Guys are the worst.
Yeah. That's
awful. I feel like, you know, it's just this scene is very real, you know, and obviously clearly that's awful. It's absolutely awful.
I never really thought about it like in relation to that, but yeah, wow, teenage trauma.
Yeah, definitely. It was also, I mean, I guess sort of going along with things that were awful on the show. I mean, it was that scene of Angelus pretending to still be Angel when he goes to the hallway and Willow, you know, Willow and Xander are still, they're kind of trying to make up at that point, actually. And he's like, Willow, come here. And she like goes and he's like, get the other Xander. And oh, it's because you don't know what's going to happen at that point. Like, he could have killed Willow. He could have killed all of them in that moment. And it's only because Buffy comes that they are, you know, live to see another day. And I just, the threat of Angelus is
so real. It was Jenny.
Real.
Jenny saved
Jenny,
them.
Jenny did. You're
Even
right.
Even though everyone
right.
hates her, she saved them.
That is true. A very good point. Oh, I just think it's so scary. I think Angelus, you've worked so well because he's so genuinely scared. And that's what I never really got from Ripper stuff. And again, not to talk it down, but like I feel like Angelus.
You hate
such
Ripper?
A good villain. Ripper Stefan, no, it's fine, but he's not Angelus.
Oh,
you know?
No, sorry.
Giles Ripper.
Ripper in Giles Ripper. I did not know what you were talking about.
Too many Rippers. But yeah, so super, super scary. And then after that scene, we go into that scene where Buffy breaks down on her bed. And that scene, again, Sarah Michelle Gellar, it's just brings it here so completely. Like, you believe it. You believe everything.
Wait, what is this fun fact about the sex scene?
This is going to be great. It's going to ruin everything for you guys. So, flashback to the love scene. And we were, like, at first of all, like, I was so surprised. Every time I watch this, and I watched this with my family last year, Buffy, and I was so surprised by how lengthy and how graphic that scene is. Like, for the WB in the 90s, it just seems so impossible. But yeah, so super sexy scene, super sexy noises. I'll become a little bit less sexy when I tell you that actually Joss Whedon, he was too embarrassed to ask the actors to come in and do the noises, so he did the noises.
Oh my gosh, isn't that worse movement. Though?
That's so much worse. That is like, so much when
you,
worse.
Like, if I was either one of them, I would be like, why didn't you just ask me, please? Like,
I know. But it's like, you can sort of, because like, okay, when you don't know, you don't notice. When you know, you
that
notice.
So much worse. That's way creepier.
And he's like oh.
Way
he's like, oh,
creepier.
No. Yeah, it's so creepy. And like him and the poor sound woman, like had to do those noises, and so yeah, that made it all a little bit less sexy. I'm sorry, everyone, but I just think it's hilarious. So yeah, any other thoughts on that love scene?
No, now I can't. No,
ruined forever.
Yeah,
now I have to go watch it again.
I know, and hear the noises. You have to tell me if you like. It's so obvious when you know. But so like yeah, that I will say again. I was very shocked by how sensual it was and how much we saw of Angel's back and her face. So yeah, so moving on from that, if that's possible, Xander and Cordelia, who are sort of like, Xander has this big plan to save the day, and he's like, I need Cordelia for this, and Willow pulls that face that I love, and they go on this recon mission, and he's like he's probably told Cordelia, like, oh, you know, wear something like sexy or whatever, and she wears this silver jacket. I think I have this vague memory that I had one of those when I was like 14, but I may have blocked it out.
No.
Of my mind. This is, again, this is like 90s, early 2000s fashion, and it's glorious. I loved it. Oz comes along, and he's perfect. Again, this is the notes verbatim in that scene when he tells Willow, you know, I want to be kissing you. And I'm sure someone has that as their quote. And this is the moment. This is the moment when Willow finally, I think, begins to see Oz for Oz and not just as a not Xander person, you know?
Yeah, I think that that's definitely true. I think that that moment, it's when he says that to her that she's like, oh, okay, this is what a real man looks like, you know?
Yes,
this is how a real man loves or whatever. Like, and yeah, he definitely has that moment. But I love Xander. I actually really love Xander, like having that military memory and having that competence, like being, and again, I think, again, for Cordelia, I think that that's the moment when Cordelia is like, wow, he hot, like, you know, this isn't just a weird me thing. Like this is, you know, that's really attractive, or that's, you know, I really like that. And you know, the fact that he, you know, shoots down that, you know, cuts down that soldier and it works and stuff like that. And I really loved all of them in this scene, like Xander, Cordy, Willow, and Oz. I think it's the ideal scene for them.
I agree. And I like, you know, it's also just with all the Angel and Buffy angst, it's so nice to have like this shining light, you know?
Yeah.
What are you guys feeling about these dynamics of them?
I love Oz. That's my
okay. Okay. Well, we'll maybe talk about that on a future episode anyway. So we get to the Jenny point, which is going to be a fun, hopefully not too long discussion, but it is a fun sort of thing, is that everyone is mad at Jenny because they are assholes, it says in the doc. And I will say that, first of all, I think one of the best things, again, is that Buffy, the way she reacts, the way she pushes, like she needs someone to blame. She doesn't want to, like, obviously, and we don't think she should. She can't blame Angel because he's gone. she blames Jenny and she pushes her and she pushes her away and she's awful to Jenny. And I alluded to this earlier. I'm totally with you that,
I mean,
this is Buffy again at her worst, you know?
I mean, she chokes her out in public in front of students who are like, should I get the principal? Like, this is not just even bad behavior that can be covered up. This is like consequence behavior, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah,
what frustrated me a lot was even for me, Buffy's anger is like more rational. I mean, not rational. It's totally irrational. But like, she's young and it's coming from anger and like something that personally hurt her. Like, her boyfriend is now evil and she feels like it's her fault. So she's lashing out at somebody. But like, when Giles, like, I mean, I get that he wants to back Buffy up, but then he's like totally mean to Jenny. I was like, Giles, you should know better than this.
I agree with that. But I think he's just hurt that she lied. Like, here they were getting close. She was in their gang and she had this whole thing with Angel and she never said. And now, you know, Angel's evil and Buffy is devastated. And I think knowing what he does at the situation right now, I think Giles just feels like, why did you not just tell us? You know, why didn't you let us in on this? You could have done something. Like, whether or not you could have done something.
Yeah, like what damage would it have done? Like, you know, if she told them, if she'd been like, from the word go, be like, here's my deal, basically. Yeah. Because she defends to her uncle. She's like, Angel's good. Like, he saved my life. She clearly cares about Angel. She's not secretly like, haha, we need to make sure Angel is you know, suffering. she respects Angel, so she should have been like, cards on the table. I know the deal with Angel. It's actually, like, why I'm here. So we're going to do everything we can to, you know, keep Angel, like, the way he needs to be, basically, and like told them that from the start. And I don't know, like, or even gone to him and been like, hey, how's that soul going for you, you know? Like, and do you think that would have done more damage? Do you think that they would have immediately been like, oh my god, she's evil, we can't deal with Jenny, like, straight away, if she'd told them that from the start? Like, well, whether that would have landed badly
from her point of view. She's there to protect her family. This guy has a history of being super violent and crazy, and it just doesn't seem like the most appropriate thing that they should be letting him, like, hanging around a high school. But he's there. So I don't blame her for not fully trusting everybody.
I agree with that. Like, that's what I think. I think I'm totally on Jenny's side on this. I see where they're coming from. And I think you'll sort of see Giles is more hurt that she didn't tell, like, after everything they've been through, everything with Ripper, like, he let her in with bad consequences to his life and his past, and the fact that she hasn't done the same, I think that factors into his sort of initial anger, you know. But I'm at the same time, I always felt so bad for Jenny because I felt like she was being freezing out.
Did her uncle die?
Yeah, violently and bloodily.
So she, like, saw him die and everyone's just, like, still mad at her. That also really frustrated me.
Oh, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely, I totally feel that. I you know, from Giles's and Giles' perspective, choosing to stand by Buffy at this moment when Buffy is devastated, it makes sense to me, I guess. Also because he doesn't know Jenny's story, you know. Like, he doesn't see what we've seen, so. But again, we'll see what happens with her and everyone in later episodes. And I will say, at this point, I'm definitely with you. I thought that was poor Jenny. I just feel so bad for her. She didn't want to cause anything, any pain, you know.
Yeah, it would be worse if she was, like, secretly vindictive. Like, if she turned around and been like, "Haha, Angel was so evil, and I'm so proud to have been part of the family that cursed him." But she was literally like, I just want to help. I'm like, yeah. I'm sorry. I just want to help. I know what's going on and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So moving on, like, from that, which, again, we'll see in future episodes with how they react to her. But Buffy has that moment when she blows up the purple demon guy, the judge, with a rocket launcher. You know, she's like, we're going to need a bigger boat moment. And it's like this moment, it's like her taking back her power, you know. I'm pretty sure it's in the opening credits from now on out. Like, it's the moment when Buffy, like, very literally gets out the big guns and says, okay, we have a bigger bad guy this time. We have a bigger story to tell. We have a bigger hero, and she's going to need to up her game. And it's, for me, it's an extremely iconic moment for the show. I don't know what you guys think.
The blasting moment in the mall, you mean? Or
Yeah. With the rocket launcher and that sort of.
Yeah, that's definitely like a tagline image for the show, I think.
I would appreciate it more if it hadn't been Xander's idea. I feel like Xander saved the day there because it was his idea to do that.
Right.
I like that Xander thinks, you know, because all of the Slayer lore and stuff is so archaic. And yeah, and like obviously this whole thing was like, oh, no weapon forged. And it's like, well, how about we use something that was written after, made after that legend was written, you know? It's not quite the same. It's kind of like how, you know, whatever the, like, Second Amendment or whatever, your gun laws is like, oh, yeah, we have the right to bear arms. It's like, yeah, that was at a time when things were very different. Times change and rules become different. And in this universe, it means that a rocket launcher can take out someone who had a, you know, prophecy written about them when there were no rocket launchers.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't have a problem with Xander coming up with the idea because I like that he has that non-ancient knowledge.
And he almost
has
no power to begin with, you know?
Contemporary solution.
Right. Like, he needed a little win in this episode because he was, like, just to save the day for once because he never gets to save the day, you know?
Yeah.
So Buffy, I mean, after that rocket launcher moment, Buffy doesn't kill Angel, though she has the chance, you know, she kicks him in the junk instead. And I was just really wondering what you guys thought, if she should have killed him here or if she could have.
I think she's going to regret it later. He's going to do something terrible, probably. Like in the season finale, he'll like kill her mom or something. Because she's not in the opening credits either, so she's a goner for sure.
Oh my god. You're really hung up on who's in the opening credits.
Because that's who matters. That's who's going to make it to the end of the season. I think she's going to regret it later.
Right. See, that was always my thought. I was like, I totally get why she wasn't ready yet. Because it's not just a case of, oh, he's evil now, let's kill him. It's like, she still sees Angel. He's right there in front of her, you know? And it's like right after it happened. But at the same time, she's the fact that she doesn't kill him. I mean, it always felt like a very selfish choice. It was a selfish choice. But I always thought that like she could have done it right there, you know. But I'm glad she didn't because I like Angelus. So and then the final scene at the end, one of the final scenes at the end where Giles, you know, sort of continues to back Buffy up. And I know that this is Brittany's line and it was always so going to be my line because I love it so much. And I think it's sort of the important thing about the scene to note too is that the show definitely establishes here that it is not Buffy's fault what happened. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, she's been blaming herself. Like, she said, I made it happen, it was my fault, I did it to him. And it's sort of the fact that she feels this way and the other characters are like, no, like you didn't know, you couldn't have known, it wasn't your fault, you know, you. And I feel like, because in today's culture, like the victim blaming and all of this, it's such a huge issue that gets talked about a lot. It didn't get talked about a lot in the 90s. Buffy was a front runner on one of these issues. I think it shows a very complicated scenario, and it's very easy to tread wrong when you're dealing with issues like this. But I think if Buffy was one of the first shows to really go there with something like this, and I think the fact that the other characters are so definitively like, this was not you, like, you did not do this to him, this is not your fault, I think that's important. And that's obviously just my interpretation of it, but I always felt that was important. And then just the final, I guess we'll talk about it in just after I just share my appreciation for the Just Let It Burn scene, because I love everything about that, the just let it burn, the candle. And what did you do on your birthday, you know? I got older, I just beautiful. And one of the best Joyce moments we've had in the show so far.
I suppose. It still kind of annoys me where she's all like naive and like, oh, hi, and she has no idea of like the depth.
Joyce is
of
the worst.
It's interesting, this part though is she does clearly know, like she clearly knows, oh, my child is messed up in some way,
and
like
she's gone through something big and
she doesn't know what it is. No, she doesn't know what it is.
So why doesn't she ask?
I don't know.
Their relationship is so broken. I mean, that is one of the things that for Buffy and Joyce, they don't have that close. It's like, I'm watching Gilmore Girls at the moment. It's so funny because it's like the polar opposite, you know. Joyce has lost Buffy, and that's why I think Buffy gets to run around and be this superhero in secret, and Joyce has no idea. And it's sad. And you're right. I mean, in a lot of ways, Joyce is not ideal. At least not, you know, right now. And I think
I want Joyce to ask the hard questions. I want her to, she knows something is wrong, so why mm-hmm. doesn't she do something about it? Like, I just keep thinking to one time in high school, I was like so sad and depressed. And then finally, my mom kept asking what was wrong. And I was like, I don't want to talk about it. And then finally she went and she sat in my room and she was like, I'm not leaving this room until you tell me. And so like 2 hours later mm-hmm. of her sitting there, it was like, I just want you to leave. So, okay. So
right. Well, yeah, I mean, are you that again? I mean, we'll just have to see what happens with that. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it's absolutely a good observation at this point. Joyce is just so unconnected, and it's good for Buffy, but it's also bad for Buffy. In this scene, she could have really used a mom. At least she has Giles. Giles is the father I never had, guys. I love him so much. So let's go back to that. Go back to our favorite scene, and Brittany, you can talk about Giles in the car.
Yeah, that was my favorite scene just because of the contrast that it had with how Joyce handled everything. Because she doesn't know, and she's never going to know, and Buffy needs to know that the parent figure who does know is in her corner. And that's important exactly. for her to fall back on. Like, Joyce is in Buffy's corner, but in a different way. Like, she gets frustrated with her. She wants to punish her. She has that whole, like, period of, like, grounding her. And she does what she can in this moment, which is, like, she sees she's upset. And she's like, don't forget, like, we have a shopping trip. Thinking, like, that's what Buffy likes. This is the Buffy that I have concocted in my head. To be like,
this was Buffy before she became a vampire.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, this is the slayer, daughter sorry. That I think
that's
I know.
A vampire slayer.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, I liked the scene with Giles in the car when it was happening, but after watching the Joyce scene, I liked it, I appreciated it even more. Because I was like, oh, everyone's emotional, Giles is just, like, you know, saying this to say this, but it held much more importance after you see what Buffy goes home to.
Mm, you're right. Yeah. Absolutely agree. I love Giles so much. Oh, Giles. Let's see. What about your favorite scene, Ayanna?
Mine was definitely Oz shutting down Willow's make-out advances because he's so great.
Absolutely. And mine, I mean, I was going to say, I like the Buffy rocket launcher scene because it's so iconic, but I think my favorite bit is a tiny bit when the gang confronts Buffy about what happened. They're like, what could possibly have caused this change? And Willow figures out what happens, and she's just like, Giles, shut up. And
I love when she tells him to shut up, honestly, like, you know, not in an aggressive way, but I love it so much.
Yeah, I love it so much. And Natalie, what was yours?
Mine was Angel's or Angelus's first reunion scene with Spike and Drusilla, especially, you know, just everything, like when he comes in and they're like, hey, burn him. And then, you know, he tries and you know, the guy can't burn him. And then he does that little kind of like, whoops face, like, and he's just so sassy. And when he's sort of just playing with them and, like, you know, kissing Spike on the head and just, you know, and Drew's all, like, going, you know, she's all ecstatic and, you know, because even before he became evil again, even before he became Angelus, she always still called him, like, my angel and stuff like that. And I just found this hysterical and great and, like, so telling about the characters and the dynamic and all of that. So
this is when the world realizes that David Boreanaz could act. They were like, "Oh my god!" No, I know he's been doing a subtle thing all along, but I think this is when this is. No, I don't mean that he hasn't acted well before. I think this when he becomes Angelus, you realize what the angel stick was all about.
Yeah, you realize what he's putting on for Angel and like what his range is, because that's again, I've said it, you know, on many episodes but not once with you on it, Selena. I am so appreciative of him, like, as an actor in this rewatch, in a way that I've never been, like, you know, I've never watched Buffy from a really critical viewpoint. Like, you know, I never watched it, like, I haven't rewatched it in a few years. I don't think I've rewatched it since I've started podcasting about shows in general. I've watched random bits, but no, I probably the last time I would have watched it was in 2010. He's amazing. Like, he's a very, very, very good actor with very wide range, and I find him hilarious and subtle and great. And I just, this was so good, and I'm so, so in love with it. So,
It's like before that time. Like I always, and it's funny because I kind of reset when I get back to the pilot in a lot of ways. I watch all seasons and I get back to the pilot. I'm like, okay, well, starting over. And I'm like, oh, David Boreanaz. Oh, you know, he's kind of like a weak link. Oh, I don't know. And then get to this point. No, well, when we get to this point, I'm like, oh yeah, you're like, that's what he was doing. And I sort of get back into it all over again. And I look back on the season one and two, and I'm like, I get what he was doing now, you know? And in the scenes when he's not with Buffy, you see it too. Like, that's why his scenes with Willow and Giles and stuff were the best.
Yeah, I love the scenes without Buffy. Like, not that I kind of like him and Buffy together, but I love the kind of scenes where he's, you know, like, I lurk, etc. Like, no, like, I just found him so great. But yeah, the Angelus stuff is really amazing. So.
Yeah. Yes, I'm glad we're all on board with that because I certainly am too. Got through everyone on that. So let's go through our favorite lines. And Brittany, we're bringing it back to Giles.
Of course. I wanted to do the whole scene in the car, but I just took his last line when he says, "If it's guilt you're looking for, Buffy, I'm not your man. All you will get from me is my support and my respect." And it's just so heartbreaking.
He is our.
I stared at a gift dad. Set of this for a long time.
Oh, I know. It's just he's just the. I don't have words. He's just the best. And Ariana, what's yours?
Mine was, "We're gonna go destroy the world. Want to come?"
It's a good one. Mine was bringing it back to the Willow and Xander scene. It goes, "It just means that you'd rather be with someone you hate than be with me." And I identify 110% with all of Aww. This. So sad. Natalie, what was yours?
I put this one because it just stuck with me for a long time when I first watched the show for some reason, which was when Drew is lying on her, you know, coffin bed thing and says, what does she say? She says, like, "Oh, I'm naming all the stars." And Spike's kind of like, "You can't see the stars, love. That's ceiling. Also, it's day." Not only is it just funny, the way that he relates to her is really interesting to me, and I never know whether it's like good or bad, if you know what I mean, because he's really indulgent of her most of the time, and then he gets to sort of the end of his tether and like snaps with her like about things like, "No, you know, like the bird's dead, Drew, you didn't feed it and it died, you know, that kind of thing." And then he's kind of like, and he upsets her, and then he's like, "I'm so sorry, this is my fault," like, you know. And at least for some people, it's a pretty honest portrayal of what it's like looking after someone with like dementia or Alzheimer's. The carer at some point, you know, get to the end of their tether and can't, you know, no one has infinite patience, even if they love the person. And it just always reminded me of that, basically. So I found that interesting. But I don't know, like the way they Drew and Spike are a whole different level of crazy. You can't really compare it to anything real, but it did remind me of that. And that line I just always remembered kind of as being funny and then can be looked at on a deeper level. I also appreciated Oz and Willow being like, "Do you steal weapons from the army often?" And she's like, "We have to make our own fun. We don't have cables." So that was, in terms of pure funny, that was the best.
Absolutely. I guess that brings us to the end of this extra long podcast about two of the most important episodes. I know these guys, like these two episodes are on some people's like top 10 lists and stuff. And they're not on mine. In my opinion, there's a lot greater episodes coming up, but I see why. I think this, again, as I said, this is a turning point and I'm excited what happens next. I just realized we have listener feedback to get through. This will be fun. Let's see how quickly we can get through this, guys. So there was a big showdown between Bad Eggs and Ted, and Bad Eggs won like as the worst episode. I'm not surprised. Bad Eggs is generally considered the worst. I always liked Ted less. I don't know why. I just never liked it. So let's read out these comments from everyone. If we just take it, Natalie, Ariana, and Brittany.
This first one isn't super appropriate to me because I wasn't on the birthday party, but Laura Jergensmeyer, L. Jergensmeyer on Twitter says, "Listening to the special made me sad that I decided to skip Avatar. It sounds like it was hilarious. Also, I love that I could watch this episode and put everyone's faces with their voices. You guys are awesome." This is in reference to our 150th episode live stream, which I was not able to be on for reasons that you can hear if you listen to last week's episode of Rewatchable. But
basically because Natalie doesn't wear pants, basically.
Look, why you gotta come for me like this, Ariana? But yeah, it was true. That was true. But I didn't realize it was a live stream, not just a podcast, and I was not appropriately dressed by the time that we were ready to do it. I love doing live streams with podcasts. I've done them before. What did you say, Laura?
Oh, I just wanted to say that this made me happy because Laura was a really big like listener during Veronica Mars, and she would always write in and stuff. And so when she wasn't on Avatar, it was really sad. But now she's back, apparently, for Buffy.
Go back and watch the Avatar, listen to the show, and tweet us your live. We will probably, I think Avatar might be the collective favorite show that we've ever done on. Oh, I mean, I
it was like, it was almost tied Avatar with Veronica Mars. We did a poll.
But I don't know about for the public, but for all of the newbies and stuff, I feel like that this was, people loved it so much, and it was so fun and so funny. And we got really terrible about cartoon teenagers' relationships and all sorts. So it was great. I don't have that much to compare it to because I did not do Veronica Mars, but it was great. So everyone should go watch Avatar and then listen to our Avatar Rewatchable, and you could watch the live stream if you haven't yet. I assume it's like backlogged on YouTube.
Cool.
So next we have Emmy Foss at Emmy Classic, and she says, "I'm one of the very few people who actually like Bad Eggs." Well, you do you, Emmy. And Ted is great if you skip all this stuff. It's not Giles and Jenny. So basically, if you skip everything except for like 2 minutes. And then she said, also thanks to Rewatchable, I'm finally watching Avatar. Yay!
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Mandy K, who says, watching Bad Eggs reminds me, why did you guys keep calling it a worm? It had legs and tentacles. Full disclosure, 90% of us watched it with our eyes closed, so...
It did come out. Yeah. Okay, because first of all, it opened up. That little worm came out and, like, felt Buffy's face and then went back into the egg. And, that's sort of what I hung on to. But, yeah, it was so rather unappealing.
Did you guys know that Spike was originally imagined as a character like those Gorch vampires from Bad Eggs? Like, that was the original pitch for him. And then James Marsters came in and was British. Like, and they were like, oh, my God. Yeah, but no, he was supposed to be, like, American. He was supposed to only stick around for, like, a couple of episodes. And, like, they had a very Bad Eggs-y sort of idea for him, and then they were like, this guy's awesome, let's keep him around. And then the gorgeous happened.
Yeah, he was kind of just meant to be a random, interesting person. Like, you know, oh, a vampire with a bit more of a personality who's around for one episode or whatever, which, again, I'll say I really like that they did that with the Gorchers, and they will do that again in the future. There will be more vampires that have personalities, and I really always enjoy those. Spike was meant to, just be a short-term character. And then, the British thing, James Marsters, the actor, isn't even British, but for some reason that's how he saw the character, because he's got that look of that kind of, like, British punk kind of era. I was talking to Mitch about his eyebrow scar, which is not the face molding scar. The eyebrow scar was a scar that James Marsters really had, and the choice was either cover it up, like, remove the scar, or paint it in to make it, like, a feature of the character, make it more, pronounced, and they did that. So his scar is real, one across like through his eyebrow, not the blistered face that he currently has.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Natalie, Ariana, and Brittany, do you want to take the last three?
Untherian just says, comment about next episode, but I don't think it's a spoiler unless you look it up. I absolutely love Close Your Eyes, the musical theme that plays through Surprise, one of my favorite TV score themes in existence. Selena, it's called Close Your Eyes. That's what it's called.
It is. Called Close Your Eyes. That's the name of it. So obviously, like, that's kind of like one of the things that you do, just, you know, obviously don't Google Buffy. You guys know that at this point.
Don't Google what that reference is, but oh.
Do, 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 do.
I've said too much.
It's so good. Such a good piece of music. So, Melissa,
in regards to next week's episodes, forget Angel. That Oz line in the van was everything. Back in high school, my best friend introduced me to Buffy, and we were both so in love with Seth Green that we skipped the beginning of the series and only watched the episodes after Oz came on. Since then, I've watched and fallen in love with the entire show. But it's almost painful to watch Willow meeting Oz because it takes me back to when I was so unhappy in high school, and I could relate so much to Willow back then. And Oz was the guy I was supposed to be with who never showed up. That's really sad.
Let me tell you... That's so beautiful. Let me tell you, the Seth Green obsession in high school, at least in the 90s high school, was very real for a lot of people. people I had on my wall, like ripped out of magazines, posters in the like late 90s, Seth Green, James Vanderbeek, and Ryan Reynolds from Two Guys Go on a Pizza Place era. Oh, I love people who loved, you know, had those 90s crushes.
I didn't have any crushes from Buffy. I think Buffy was just my crush. Like, not, but I was just like, yeah, Buffy, like wild and crazy. So, yeah, Danielle's comment.
Yeah, so we got a comment from Danielle, who is our co-host, who we'll have on someday, I promise, guys. I know you guys want her on. So she said, so I totally had to do an egg-like teen parenting thing in my sociology, marriage, and family class in high school, and it was obnoxious. Instead of eggs, we had to carry around full bags of flour, because they apparently wanted us to know how heavy babies can be and how exhausting it could be to hold them. And we had to decorate to look like children, diaper and all. And if the sacks were damaged at all by the end of the week, we'd have points taken off. Most flour bags were standard size, but there were two people who got extra large bags and even one or two students who had to carry around twins. Since I got such a high grade in the class and thought the assignment was dumb, I just throw it down and beat it up all the time. I even let my band director chuck my flour bag across the room into a large garbage can once, just because. Surprisingly, the bag never busted. Needless to say, I survived the week begrudgingly and did not volunteer for the extra credit assignment, where we could take home one of those crying baby dolls that would wake you up in the middle of the night and whatnot. Dodged a bullet there. So, yep, that's my story.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Can I add something about the flower baby situation? Because we were talking about this last week, and I was gonna bring it up, but we didn't sort of get the chance to talk about it. There is a novel by Anne Fine. It was a Carnegie Medal, like a British kids, you know, young adult novel called Flower Babies, which deals with this kind of, like, it literally deals with one of these scenarios of a class of children doing this, but it's like super dark, not like dark, dark, but it's like,
not like bad, you know, eggs dark.
No, not like dark, like supernatural, evil dark, just like really introspective and upsetting and about, you know, quiet childhood trauma. And so if anyone wants like a non-hilarious take on the whole, you know, school assignment baby thing, look up the book called Flower Babies, because it is messed up.
Sounds good. So many recommendations this week. I like it. So we are at the end of the show, you guys, and it's been very exciting. Are you guys the newbies? Are you excited to see what happens next?
I am.
Don't all jump at once.
Because the Netflix spoils everything that's going
to
happen.
I know. You guys, I wish you didn't have to watch it on Netflix. You have to, like, learn to put your hand on the thing so you don't spoil yourself. Netflix is the worst.
Maybe you should just torrent them or something so you don't have to deal with Netflix. Not that you should torrent them.
I could also just have some self-control and not read it, but I don't.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a shame. I wish you... Anyway, it's them. Not my business, but I hope that you guys are excited. I'm definitely excited to watch what happens next. Next week we have, I believe it's Phases and Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered, which
these
are
two episodes awesome, I love. Fantastic. They're so good.
I would not trade these for anything, but almost anything, but I this next week is going to be good. I'm excited. So you can check that out on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. If you have any thoughts on this episode or future episodes of Buffy, spoiler free, you can send that to re_watchable on Twitter. You can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can of course leave a comment on this post on hypable.com. That's everything. Thank you so much for joining us. And my name is Selena.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Brittany.
Goodbye. Bye. Play the love.
Was that a sound of music?
Oh. It was heading in that direction.
Yeah.